to X Squared Radio, where the past meets the future. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. In here, the results are always positive. We explore the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. Whether you are driving across the country or listening on the web while you're working on your favorite project, you are about to learn more about who we are, and why we are here, and what we may become if you thought possible. We might go a little past your imagination, but have no fear. You will be safely traveling with us. Keep your arms inside the vehicle, recline your chair, and look out the window as we launch X Squared Radio. Did you know you have existed for many thousands of years? The thought of reincarnation escapes most people, as it did me until I read this book. Your Never-Ending Life is the first in the Universal Learning series from Sandy Andrew. Search your higher mind, find your soulmate, and know that you are never alone in this world. The treasures of the eternities are yours, and your first step is to read the book. Click the banner for Your Never-Ending Life by Sandy Andrew at X Squared Radio and order the book today. The foundations of religion and science were used to restore knowledge lost for over 6,000 years in our first book. The Ark of Millions of Years, Volume 2, called 2012 and the Harvest of the End Times, brings us vital knowledge for the race of mankind. Have the Watchers returned? What did the Aztecs mean by their ancient predictions for the year 2012? Why is Earth changing so rapidly now before our very eyes? Who were the Shining Ones who lived on the Earth and worked with mankind as they recovered from cataclysm? Who are we? Where did we come from? If you could find a book that answers just one of these questions, you'd buy it. Now there are two in this series that is sweeping the world with its message. Go to arcofmillionsofyears.com. Get your autographed copy today. Now, also available in full audio version. And greetings, Earth Explorers. So nice to be back in Western Kentucky, where the land is green, although the stars aren't as bright as they are out west. The solar wind is up to a brisk 466.5 kilometers per second tonight. If you live on the Northern Hemisphere, you will want to watch for an aurora. Sunspot 905 looks like it's been hit with a giant hammer. Once, several times the size of Earth, it has been broken into numerous pieces. Rapidly changing sunspots are prone to explode. So there may yet be a powerful flare from this one. There is a sizable coronal hole facing Earth, from which that wind is streaming. We might be able to see auroral lights as far south as Denver or even Phoenix, so you definitely want to keep an eye out for those. For the next few months, you may want to get up before dawn, there is a rare and powerful zodiacal light that precedes the dawn. This is a cloud of particles surrounding the sun that are lit up brightly and show up in the pre-dawn sky. They'll even wash out the stars. They are larger than the solar system itself. As we near the rift in the Milky Way, these particle clouds will become thicker and more filled with dark matter. The total gravitational drag will begin pulling tidally on Earth. Be prepared for the shaking and rumbling and sky events to intensify. I want to let you know we have been trying for several months to bring on board a food storage company, an emergency preparedness company. We finally got one, NitroPack. If you've ever wondered how to get ready for sudden events, we finally have the answer for you. Whether it's an earthquake, hurricane, tornado, flood, or even a terrorist attack, each of us must be personally prepared with long storing food reserves, stored water and purifiers, first aid and sanitation supplies, etc., for a minimum of 7 to 14 days. A 30 to 60 day reserve and more would even be better. When crisis strikes, the time to prepare is over. The stores will empty out in a matter of hours, so this is something you might want to take care of very quickly. Sort of like trying to buy home fire insurance when the house is on fire. Now, the time to seriously review your preparedness supplies while time is on your side is now. If you have questions, just go to the NitroPack banner at X Squared Radio. They're here to help. They've been in business for 18 years and counting, and we're very proud to have them as a new affiliate for X Squared Radio. So go there today and start out with an excellent 72-hour emergency kit. Remember, I'll get to that in a moment. I'm a little out of practice. I'm not saying anything more about planet Pluto. Yes, it's a planet. The fact that international cosmologists define planets as bodies that gather themselves into a solid ball, that's wrong. We will discuss that a little tonight, as you'll get a clear picture of that. Pluto will soon be joined by at least one other planet, and possibly as many as 12 planets. Pretty cool. We here at X Squared Radio want you to do three things for us. We have committed to bringing you all of our content for free. You can listen for free to the live broadcast, the archives, and even the podcasted archives. All we ask is that you do the following. When you get ready to buy inkjet cartridges, historical replicas, or other neat stuff for your space, or now in this case, emergency preparedness supplies, please shop the affiliates at X Squared Radio. The prices are amazingly low, and in most cases, you get free shipping. Sign up for our newsletter. It's right on the front of the website at x2-radio.com. It's free as well. And by the way, send us the call letters of your local AM radio station. If you'll do those things, we'll make sure our sponsors and affiliates pay to bring you this program at their expense. Next week on X Squared Radio, we will have Michael Sunanda on the program. We'll be discussing the Earth's reaction to man's activities relative to global warming and other ecological misbalances. We'll really help you to understand things like the carbon footprint, some of the international politics behind global warming, and what can be done about it. You've heard the hype. Now it's time to get the straight scientific scoop from X Squared Radio. If the weather has been a little unusual where you live, you have to tune in. We'll be waiting for you. Tonight, we have a special event. I have decided to open up the phone lines for the entire night to the world. We will accept toll-free calls from the U.S. and Canada. Here are the numbers. If you live in the United States, you can call 877-876-5227 toll-free. That's 877-876-5227. From Canada, you can now call in toll-free at 888 888-810-8322. That's 888-810-8322. And from anywhere else on or off the earth, you may call in at 530-876-3222. Be aware, that is not a toll-free call. I believe that number works out to around 23,000 miles out into space. So if you're further out than that, try moving in a little closer to make your connection. If you're calling from deep beneath the Earth's crust, I suppose you can use any number you like. We would love to hear from you tonight. In our first hour, and perhaps a little longer, I want to talk about the events that happened at James Gilliland's sanctuary at Trout Lake, Washington, this last weekend. You know that I broadcasted live from there, but many of you who tune in here didn't catch it because we didn't start right at 6 to 9 p.m., our normal time. As you know, conventions kind of slip and slide a little bit based on presentations and weather and getting crowds in and out of buildings. And, well, suffice it to say, we were on Native American time. We just kind of slid with the flow a little bit. So we actually, you might have heard music for the first hour, maybe hour and 15 minutes of X Squared Radio, and then all of a sudden, there we were, live on the podium. Many people did listen. I did have friends that have other talk radio programs, the Night Watchman Chronicles, and Chris listened, as well as did Bruce Collins. Both of them have been very excited about it, and we did go on Night Watchman Chronicles the other night, and you might want to go to that. It's thenightwatchmanchronicles.com and listen to that broadcast. It was excellent. At least I was standing behind the podium in front of about 300-plus people in a building that was about, I'd say about 90 degrees in temperature, although the humidity wasn't like it is here in Western Kentucky, and it was definitely an experience. But I'm going to take you through all 4 days of this event, and I can't tell you in advance what's going to happen. It's going to be affected by your phone calls, and it's going to be affected by how I feel at the moment. But I'm going to tell you everything that I can. In the second hour, I will try to talk in as much detail as I can about the Hollow Earth expedition. There have been some very sudden recent changes, and you need to know where we stand with respect to that venture. I think you will be extremely excited about this, and may be instrumental in helping us pull it together. In the third hour, I want to see if you can bring me your experiences with ETs, or even with other lives you might have had. I know there have been hundreds of you out there who have been through Dr. Greer's training on the CE5 protocol. That's the Close Encounters of the Fifth Kind protocol. I know there are people all over the world who have communicated with ETs. You can tell your story here without commercial interruption. You are safe here. We are all safe here at X Squared Radio. The event I call Global First Contact is getting closer by the day. You feel it? I feel it. I want to hear your story. So please call in tonight at one of those numbers. If you've just tuned in, you can go to x2-radio.com and you can see those numbers posted at the top. According to your geographical area, or even if you're off planet, you can call in beginning now. The following program is true. All of the events actually happened, and I was a witness or a participant. These are my words, my interpretations of what occurred, and in no way are they designed to replace those events that anyone else felt or saw. If there are any people who attended this conference, they want to call in and share their story, they will be allowed to do so freely and without any prevention whatsoever. What you are about to hear may change the way you view your religion, It may change the way you view mortality and eternal life. Hopefully, it will improve the intensity with which you love and the passion you have for life and the souls you meet while living it. I arrived at the conference in Trout Lake, Washington, around 6 p.m. on Thursday of last week. There were about 200 people there already, pitching tents and more arriving every hour. I got out my video camera, and I started to interview people that had come to the conference. I just sort of walked through the camping area and stopped at each little camp, requesting if I could interview them on film. Took little 2 or 3 minute video interviews, and as soon as I can get those in a decent file size, I will post them on the website, and you'll be able to view them so that you can decide for yourself. They were all great people from all over the planet. They came to see extraterrestrials and to have a UFO experience. And before I begin tonight, I would like to have your help. I think it's time we dispense with the term UFO. I would like to form a new one. I use off-worlders, but they may in fact be transdimensional and very much of this world. So how can we tonight come up with a new term for these craft? That I'm going to leave up to you, and that's your assignment tonight, one of them. If you are in particular mood, or you have already done so and I haven't found your link, you can call in and we'll give you some free publicity. Well, that Thursday night was amazing for me personally. I'm going to give you my personal perspective of this event. I read the book, Your Never Ending Life, a few months back. We had the author, Sandy Andrew, on this program, and you just heard my commercial for that book. And if you want to get this book, you can, of course, just click on the cover that's on the front page of X Squared Radio, and you'll go right to his website, and you can buy it. I was raised to be, for lack of a better term, prejudiced against the idea that we have lived many lives before this one, perhaps even on other planets. Well, that changed on this Thursday night forever. Without going into details, I met people, and one in particular, with whom I had close relations in lives past. It became clear to me that we had wandered through mortal lives, gaining more and more experience without reconnecting until this night. I had been visited with dreams for about 2 years now about these people. I knew them. I loved them, and I died near them or even in their arms. I don't know the nature of our life completely, but I'm getting flashes, and as I do, I'll share them with you. I'm not afraid. Now, I was at an event that was destined to change the universe, theirs, yours, and mine, forever. The sanctuary is at the foot of Mount Adams. I don't know if you know where that is in Washington. It's about an hour and 30 or 40 minutes north of Portland by car. You drive through the mountains next to the Columbia River, and it is incredible. The sky was majestic. As the sun went down, the colors were striking, and of course the mountains changed color every 5 minutes. I tried to get it all in my burned on my retinas so that I could remember it forever. But Mount Adams is renowned for extraterrestrial activity and for unidentified flying objects. Oh, there, you see, I'm saying it again, UFO. We need to come up with a new term for that. The stars were so plentiful that the Milky Way looked like a cloud. The weather was hot, but it was dry. Visitors camped in an open field of echinacea. That's the herb that's used to improve your immune system. So it was quite interesting to be there. This night was the beginning of something phenomenal. The united spirit of everyone there was collected to bring the extraterrestrials close to us. I have found that this is a prerequisite for having them come in close and make contact. That night, many of us became close to one another, became reacquainted with one another. Even if we hadn't known each other, it seems, in this mortal life. It was amazing because person by person, we walked through the crowd and over again, we met people where we were saying, hey, I know you from somewhere. I'm sure I know you from somewhere. But it was not true. We had not ever met in this mortal life. But something about these people became very close and very recognizable. The following morning, the conference began about 11 o'clock. The first day opened with a wonderful song by a little 13-year-old girl. By the way, if you want to, I'm sure very soon on James Gilliland's website, that would be eseti.org or eseti.com, I believe you can get copies of all of the video that went on during this conference. You need to do this just to hear this little girl sing this song. The song was called Ancient Cities. I will get the lyrics for you, but suffice it to say, we were all moved deeply by this young artist's singing and violin playing. It was the perfect setting for the conference. I am told she was assigned another song, but she didn't want to do it. She resisted learning it. She wanted to do this song. This was the song she wanted to do, and I will do my very best to get these lyrics for you. They are tremendous. It's a song about the city of Atlantis. To say the day was fantastic is not enough. I know some of you have been to conferences before where like-minded people are talking about the paranormal. They're talking about the spirit of getting to know off-worlders, of making contact. And you're familiar with this, but many of you, maybe many thousands of you, are not familiar with this, so I'm going to sort of take you through this. The presenters were phenomenal. Each person spoke for about 90 minutes, bringing a vital piece to the puzzle, explaining why we are here and what we can become. And they talked about contact with off-worlders, both in their craft and on the ground, and previous experiences. But the night was even better than the day. There was a film called Star Dreams about crop circles that they showed just before dark. There were crop circles I'd never seen and testimony that I had never heard. This film was profound. If you have a chance to see it, you need to see this film. If I can get a link to where you can order that DVD, I will get it on the website so that you can have it, because it's powerful stuff. This was not a film you would see on mainstream television, because it went into fabulous details about the events. It talked about the changes of the wheat itself inside and outside the crop circle. Outside the crop circle. Now, keep in mind, all this wheat's planted at the same time. They just run out there with the tractors and the seed, and they just plant just like we do here in the States. But outside the crop circle, at the time the samples were taken, the wheat was immature, not quite ready for harvest, still green. Inside the crop circle, the wheat was twice as tall, fully mature, lots of wheat buds, and lots of botanical changes to the wheat stalks themselves. All of this is clearly represented in this film. You can also hear the testimony of several of the people that were present when it occurred. Also, on film, we saw shining objects that moved across the top of the wheat, and testimony from people that these huge, elaborate, beautiful geometric shapes formed in these crops, not overnight, but in a matter of minutes. In a matter of minutes. And sometimes it occurred before their very eyes. To hear the testimony of these people with tears in their eyes and their hearts deeply touched, surely not knowing what the crop circle is actually saying, but definitely a change in feeling inside and outside the crop circle. And isn't this what it's all about? Is the contact between souls, spirits that live here and spirits that do not, or spirits from this dimension and spirits from other dimensions. And it's a good feeling, nothing frightening about it. You also hear mentioned in the film, and I'm going to try to describe to you as best I can, another term called orbs. I know most of you have heard the term orbs. Maybe I have too. Some with skepticism and some with some personal experience. This Friday night at this conference was phenomenal. As we left the meeting hall and walked out into the field, of course it takes quite a long time for 300 or 400 people to come out of a building into a field some 60-70 yards away. I was sitting toward the rear with my friends and came out, and as we looked up, the sky was just striking. There is a protocol that's used with lights to sort of hail these craft. I'm not completely familiar with it, but I did witness it. The first flash of lights went up just as we neared the field. My friend and I looked straight up, and we saw what looked to be a satellite, a little golden craft going from west to east, much in the manner a satellite would look if you were looking up in the sky. And then they flashed the lights, and everything changed from there. Within seconds, I mean less than a minute, less than 30 seconds, as soon as the lights flashed on this object, it stopped. And it increased from a dull golden color, like a satellite would look like up in the sky, or something where the sunlight was reflecting off of it over the horizon. And it became as bright as lightning. And it increased in size about 50 times its normal size. And it lengthened. I don't know how to describe that, but it was longer than it was wide. Let's put it that way. It appeared to be coming down on top of us. It took me so much by surprise, and my friend as well, that we both gasped. We just, like that. And I'm sure everyone who saw it did the same thing. Within that instant, the size increased, stopped, paused for 2 or 3 seconds, and then it went back to its normal size, and it resumed on its course. Now, that was a remarkable event. I observed it as a scientist, a direct response to stimulus, which is remarkable, and I'm telling that to you here and now. But it was also enlightening. It was emotional. And I will never get over it. And I'm going to go out again. I'm going to try to get closer the next time. During the night, there were photographers there setting their cameras, digital cameras up, high-resolution cameras up on tripods, and photographing what appeared to be just plain old night sky. During the next 2 days, we would see the results of those photographs. These are cameras that didn't move, that just took photographs. And what appeared in those photographs was quite remarkable. If I get a chance to get my hands on some of those, I will post those on the website. But let me give you a verbal description. We took a 8-megapixel or a 10-megapixel digital picture at high resolution, and we put it up on a 25-foot screen in a dark building, and we blew it up to where those orbs were 6 feet to 20 feet across. And the detail that was inside these orbs is stunning. Geometric shapes, faces, animals, all kinds of things that are crystal clear once blown up where you can look at them. Are they photographic flaws? I doubt it seriously. Because what was happening in that field was a union of souls. I don't know how to put it any other way. We became closer to one another as mortals, as people, brothers and sisters, lovers and friends. But we were also joining with others that were there because our spirits, our souls had joined together in one quest without prejudice, without fear, without judging, without criticism of one another. One heart, one mind, one exploring mind. That's why here, where you're an Earth explorer, you're so welcome. You would have been welcome out there, too. I felt it. My friend felt it. And if we felt it, then they felt it. Now, there are orbs that show up from time to time there. They're photographed. But not like this. Not tornadoes, whirlpools of orbs. Not clouds and layers and colors and shapes and all kinds of amazing higher dimensional effects that can only be picked up with the higher frequencies that a digital camera can pick up. That's what was occurring that night. That was Friday night. The feelings from the crowd, the feelings from the people for the rest of that week, for the rest of that weekend, were incredible. They were overwhelming. It was a bond, but it wasn't a new bond. A little difficult to explain. It was an old bond. It was like bringing things to our remembrance. And it's difficult to describe, but I know that you know what I'm talking about. Over the next 2.5 hours, you can call in from anywhere in the U.S., 877-876-5227, toll free. In Canada, 888-810-8322. And from anywhere in the world, Europe or otherwise, you can call 530-876-3222. We don't want to miss your input on this. Saturday, the presentations just intensified. We learned more about the nature of the off-world presence on the Earth, both anciently and presently. We also learned about things that were getting ready to come to pass. We learned about exopolitics. I know you know what that is, but the actual experts, Dr. Sala and Angelica Whitecliff, were there talking about it. Not just between man and man, country and country, between worlds, between species. It was important. It was moving. It was priceless for the relationship of man to the planet, for the relationship of man to the galactic community, and for the relationship of man to other species like dolphins and whales. Makes me want to go to Hawaii and swim with the dolphins. I may make that trip next year. Some very exciting, mind-opening things with which those people are very familiar. They brought their expertise and their love for that to us and made a presentation, and it touched us. We also had technical presentations on things like mind control and electronic stimulation of the subconscious by forces who would use that as, quote, non-lethal weaponry or for spying. And although these might be very useful tools, to violate one's consciousness is unconscionable, and yet is going on. And so we discussed that as well. Now, Saturday night was something completely different. Saturday night, we've been prepared by Friday night's sudden appearance of a bright light, as I described earlier. But Saturday night, the tension, not the tension, the anticipation, the apprehension, the curiosity, the flavor. I could use 100 nouns to explain this, but you get the idea. Trust me, by the time the sun went down, we were all flat on our backs looking at the sky, and it was getting cold. If we have a caller on the line, do we have a first name and where you're calling from?
My name's Robin, and I'm calling from North Carolina.
I can hear you.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay. I have a couple questions for you. I do want to hear about more about what happened this weekend with you, too. I did have a question about the orbs you were asking. The orbs that you saw, like, was this the first time you felt like you really got a clear understanding of what they were? I mean, was this different for you when you were watching these movies on the orbs than, let's say, if you'd watched the History Channel or Discovery or something like that?
Oh, that's a really good question. I had seen photographs of orbs before, but I guess I treated them as flaws in the photography. I didn't really trust them. I've had people send me photographs before of orbs, but they didn't tell me the conditions under which they took them, or I thought maybe they were dust particles or bugs or, you know, something flying in the flash and just tremendously out of focus that formed an appearance of an orb. But I watched the careful technique that was used to photograph these that night, and I did notice that there weren't any bugs and there was no dust. I was there in the field. And I also noticed that a lot of these pictures were taken in pretty close succession with one another, like 10 seconds apart. If they were dust particles, if they were bugs, then you wouldn't have a cloud full of dust particles and bugs above someone's head, and then 10 seconds later, complete blackness.
Well, that's true. Did any of these orbs, did they look, though, very similar to, the dust particles you always see? It's just kind of like a hazy. I've heard where there's orbs, or did these have, like where they almost looked like they were clay tablets, circular clay tablets, where they actually had designs in them? I know they had different geometric shapes, but I've heard where they've had designs in them.
Yes, these had designs in them. Some sort of look like a Mayan sunstone, and others look like ice crystals, and others look like faces with beards. And
okay, well, I've got another. Do you have time for another question?
Oh, absolutely. I have all night.
Okay, for the people that, were at this ranch that you were at last weekend, do you think it's possible that the people who are finally coming to an enlightening on the subjects, these like you're discussing right now, and embracing them comfortably as a truth for them, are also the beings who are, let's say, being spiritually prepared for, like, your 2012 spiritual Earth separation from the temporal Earth? I mean, just the fact that they do understand it comfortably, is that like a signal to them that they really are more in that camp, the spiritual camp, than the temporal camp?
Are you talking about the people that were there?
Yeah, people, or anybody who also, just people like, who are becoming enlightened, like the people who are at the camp, or at the ranch, or, that in other ways of being spiritually enlightened through other practices like Ramtha. I've heard there's, kind of people are becoming enlightened that way.
I think it's part of the process of enlightenment. In my opinion, I met people who were there just to see, quote, the aliens. And I'm not really sure that they were experiencing the same spiritual enlightenment as other people. But I did meet others Specifically, I can name a couple of names, first names. I'm sure no one will know them, Gregorio and Regina. Amazing individuals with a tremendous amount of love in their hearts, just open and accepting and honest. And you could tell they were on a higher spiritual plane than people outside in the real world. And I guess my answer to your question is yes. I think that raising one's vibrational level, and we do that consciously, we do that by our own will, our own choices, aligns us more with the spiritual or the spirit matter of this planet than with the temporal or lower matter of this planet. We become, in other words, more like spirit and less like dirt. And as the two Earths begin to separate, and you will begin witnessing it, it's not going to happen night and day. It's going to happen gradual, with maybe a crescendo or a peak somewhere around December 21st, 2012, as the spirit matter portion of this Earth tries to separate and go off into another dimension. It will take the life with it that harmonizes with it, that is in very close to that vibrational pattern, and the rest of it will be separated from it, sort of like a net pulling fish out of the sea. The net will leave some water behind, and it will net some fish out of the water and carry them off into the air dimension, but we will not die. Many religions on the earth would have you believe that when this event happens, some Christian sects call it the rapture. The mere separation of higher vibrational people from lower vibrational people is a given in most religions. Even Islam talks about this. But what determines who goes where is not the allegiance of one person or another to a certain religion or another. It has nothing to do with it. It only has to do with your ability to love.
Well, are you saying that there will be like different levels of the separation, like people when they do, let's say just everybody's, you know, there's a group of 10, okay, and that they're all spiritual and they're separating, but three of the group of 10 will go to a different spiritual level than, let's say, the other seven, because let's say they may have a higher vibrational or spiritual sense or attunativeness or what?
Well, that's a good point. I think there is definitely an infinite strata or a spectrum, if you will, of vibrational levels, depending on the experience that you've gained with your soul, the choices that you've made with that experience, and how you have transcended one's instinct to survive by consuming others. If we overcome that instinct, and instead of consuming one another, we help one another, we love one another, we fulfill one another, we reach out to one another, that raises the vibrational level of not only the giver, but also the receiver. I can tell you from my own experience, I knew what the definition of love was when I was young. I had seen it, probably, but I did not know the definition of love until I felt unconditional love from another. Then I knew the meaning of love, and I did everything in my power to never violate that as long as I've lived. I've tried to pass it on to others. It doesn't mean I've been perfect at it. I certainly have not, but I think it is so valuable, and I find that it's valuable among those people that gathered this last weekend at the sanctuary, that they also had been somewhat rejected by the world because of the great love that's in them. It was seen as possibly a weakness by the world, and they have shielded themselves from personal hurt by gathering together one with another and sharing their feelings only one with another. And then at this sanctuary, we kind of all came together, and for lack of a better term, we let it all hang out, in the sense that we just poured ourselves out to other people. unafraid of being criticized. And you have to admit that the feeling at this sanctuary for these 4 days, each day it got higher and higher. You almost didn't need to sleep. You woke up and you had this tremendous joy about you. And you went to bed at night with this, just engulfed in this tremendous joy about you. And it wasn't just one with yourself or one with God. You were one with the universe. You were one with everyone that was there. And so this spectrum of what you're prepared to do, what you're prepared to feel, what you're prepared to share, it exists. And I honestly believe there's no cutoff. There's no night and day. There's no, well, you're going to make it, you're not going to make it. As I said, this separation will occur over a period of time, maybe 7 years, it may be 1,000 years, I don't know. But the separation is beginning as we speak, and it will crescendo somewhere around 2012. And during that time, various levels will be separated from this planet.
Well, thank you, Dr. Agnew. I really appreciate you taking all my questions and being so patient with me. I did buy your 2 books and enjoyed them immensely and have recommended them to all my friends. So thanks again for letting me call in.
We're friends for life. I appreciate you so much calling in.
Bye-bye.
Bye. All right, that was Robin from North Carolina, and I can't tell you what her words mean to me. You are certainly free to call in on any of the toll-free numbers. I know we have people listening in Belgium, in Norway, it looks like New Zealand. So if you want to call in, you certainly can leave your question for us, and we will answer it. This hour, I want to finish up by talking about Sunday. Well, Saturday night. I'm not done with Saturday night yet. Saturday night at 12:30, it was a little bit chilly outside, down in the 50s, and I didn't come prepared for that kind of weather, so I just had a blanket, you know, shared between the people, and my feet were cold. So we decided to go into the main house where we could look out the window at the mountain and maybe experience something without having to be cold. So, and during the previous 2 days, we had been taught some meditation techniques, which I decided to employ. As I was meditating at exactly 12:30, a remarkable event occurred to me, which I'm going to share with you over the next 10 minutes. And, you can interrupt me if you want. It's no problem. A conduit opened up between the mountain and myself. I don't know how to describe that any other way. It wasn't like a glass tube. It wasn't a bright light, but it was a connection between some source on that mountain and the middle of my chest. I was later told this might have been my heart chakra, which I am not familiar with, but that's the term that they used, and it sounds right. During the next 10 minutes, from 12:30 to 12:40, it seemed like volumes of information were being poured into me. I didn't see any of it, but I felt like something was going into me and speaking to me at the same time. I could feel it physically on my chest, like someone was blasting puffs of air at my chest. It was soft enough, but it was palpable enough that I could feel it. And I wasn't afraid. I checked my feet and my legs and my back and my arms just to make sure I wasn't all tensed up and, you know, having an anxiety attack, which I was not. I was very relaxed. I was practicing the best meditative techniques that I thought possible. And during the 10 minutes, it was incredible, this feeling that came over me. At the end of the 10 minutes, the conduit, there was a voice that came down the conduit. It said 3 words to me 3 times. It said peace, love, joy, 3 times to me. And it was in a male voice, but it was kind of high-pitched. I could tell that it was human sounding. After that, another 30 to 45 seconds went by, and another voice came, and this one was deeper, but just as soft. And it had words that I was not expecting to hear. The words were, because you are quick to forgive, you are forgiven. And then the conduit closed, real slowly, closed and withdrew. I opened up my eyes and I kind of gasped like that. And the people who were sitting behind me, one friend in particular, said, did you see that? And I said, see what? And this person said, there were maps or blueprints or charts appearing on your back, one after the other, and then disappearing. They were in soft light. I could see them. We were kind of not sitting in the dark, but we were sitting in with the lights off, but the house wasn't dark. And I was curious, because evidently this person has the perceptive ability that I needed, and I always had a witness with me the entire weekend. I did not want to witness anything and turn around and say, did you see that? And have someone say, see what? I wanted somebody looking where I was looking all the time, and I always had one. And so this was the event, and I was changed. I was moved. And during the night, I slept with that, and I didn't get much sleep. The next morning, I awoke. I came downstairs, and James and James Gilliland, who's the host of the property, and a person from Shalimar at Mount Shasta, said, hey, you look different this morning. I said, really? I feel different this morning. And during the morning, I got testimony from two other people of what had happened at exactly that same time for that exact amount of period. In the other side of the house is kind of divided by a two-story living room, kind of a catwalk, Cape Cod-style house. On the other side of the house, there was another group gathered doing pretty much the same thing we were doing. And they had a candle burning and some other things, and they said the candle was pulsing, the house was shaking, and there was a low-pitched thrum or sort of a beat going on, like a drum. And one of the people who's not from around there turned to James and said, do you have earthquakes in this area? And James said, well, yes, we do have earthquakes, but that's no earthquake. That's some kind of energy thing going on coming from the mountain. It lasted for 10 minutes, and then it went away. Outside the house, out in the field, in the camp, there were people who said they looked up, and at 12:30 there was a light ship that appeared southeast from the house up a few thousand feet. It stopped, it pulsated softly for 10 minutes and then left. All of these events tied together, and it is my testimony to you that this occurred, and I went through it, and that information is inside of me somewhere. And during the next hour, I'm going to share with you not coincidences, but amazing events that seem to have lined up relative to the North Pole expedition to the inner Earth that I am scheduled to attend next summer. I want to give you those details because I think they're very powerful. And they fit with this perfectly. But before I'm done with this, I do want to let you know that I have become incredibly bonded with these people. And next year, you need to keep coming back to X Squared Radio or BBS Radio Network. And you need to make sure that you put on your calendar next August so that you can attend the Science, Spirit, and Earth Transformation Conference at Trout Lake, Washington. Make a note of it. Go to James's website at eseti.org or eseti.com. Go to BBS Radio. Make a note of it. Make it your favorite. And put it on your calendar because you do not want to miss next year. This year, there were about 400 plus people that attended. Some left early, some came late during the weekend, but about that many people. Next year, with the events that happened this year and with the testimony that I leave with you tonight, which will be archived at x2-radio.com and at bbsradio.com. We may have 1,000 there. And with that much consciousness, the event I call Global First Contact may occur. This is better than craft landing at the White House lawn. One of the funny things about that is ETs only land where there is intelligent life. And it's pretty well known there's no intelligent life in the White House, so landing on the White House lawn would be a moot point. The place to land to make contact with Earth is south of Trout Lake in Washington. I've enjoyed sharing this with you. You can call in anytime during our next hour. I'm going to be talking about the North Pole expedition to the inner Earth. You can learn about that by going to x2-radio.com. Look on the front page. Just scroll down a little bit, and you'll see a photograph of an ice view of the planet and a link to the North Pole expedition and inner Earth. And click on that and click on the More Information tab, because we are seeking some assistance, not just funds, but we're also seeking some experts to go along with us to gather data. You need to go there right now and read that while we take this break. You can listen while you're doing that. Our phone numbers in the U.S., 877-876-5227. In Canada, 888-810-8322. And from anywhere out to 23,000 miles out in space, 530-876-3222. Make sure you keep that close. And we'll be right back with more X-Squared Radio. I'm Brooks Agnew, and this is where the past meets the future. X-Squared Radio. Shuttle fleet is very soon going to be retired. No other spacecraft in history has advanced the world more than this fleet. I wanted a way to keep that memory alive in my home, so I went to the space store and ordered a 25-inch model of the Space Orbiter. People who have seen it always comment on the incredible attention to detail in this model. If you know someone who loves the space program, and you want to get them a gift that they will never forget, you should visit the Space Store at X Squared Radio. People are always looking for something inexpensive and unique to give people they love. Well, now there is a way to give a gift that not only says how long you will love them, but it also allows you to help keep the planet green and growing. Tree Givers at X Squared Radio is the company that will plant a tree on public land somewhere in the 50 states and provide your special person with a beautiful certificate of that place. This has become one of the most popular gift sites in the world, and because of their love for the Earth, they are changing the world. So visit Tree Givers at X Squared Radio and see if you can find a gift for your special person. Brooks Agnew here with X Squared Radio. If you like wildlife art and would love to add some of the most beautiful replicas to your home or office, you should visit Wildlife Gifts at X Squared Radio. They have everything from pandas to fish to eagles to horses in all sizes and price ranges. No matter what animal you love, they have the art for you. So visit Wildlife Gifts at X Squared Radio for that special someone today. You know we have revealed to you the ancient predictions that natural disasters are going to increase in power and frequency in these times. We might not always have the National Weather Service or the Emergency Broadcasting Service. So you might want to get your hands on some of the best weather reporting instruments around. Visit Wind and Weather at X Squared Radio and pick up something that might be useful. They also have the neatest gift for your favorite people who like things for the outdoors or for their meditation garden. Check out Wind and Weather at X Squared Radio. This is Brooks Agnew with X Squared Radio with a message for our friends in the radio broadcast world. If you have noticed that your listeners aren't around anymore, it's because they are right here with us. If you would like them back in your radio fold, then all you have to do is add X Squared Radio to your program content. The statistics don't lie. We are now the fastest growing talk radio program in North America. Don't be late, because we are about to launch another hour of X Squared Radio. My friends and Earth explorers to X Squared Radio. I want to remind you again of the phone numbers, 877-876-5227 inside the United States, 888-810-8322 in Canada, toll free. And anywhere else on the planet or off planet, 530-876-3222, you can call in. This hour, I want to talk to you a little bit about the Hollow Earth Expedition. Now, some of this is going to seem remarkable to you, and, well, it should. Those of you that know about the North Pole Expedition, just bear with me a little bit, because many of the listeners out there do not know about this. There is a theory called Hollow Earth Theory, and it believes that, it purports that the Earth is in fact hollow, and that all planets of Earth's size or around this size do form as hollow spheres, not as solid balls out in space. Well, that much is true, but it's one of those things that, well, people wonder about it, people think about it, they look at the evidence and they think, gee, you know, how could this possibly be? We look at the theory that Earth has a solid core and then a bunch of magma in between, and then there's a crust on the outside, and then we have tectonic theory, and the plates are kind of floating around on a pool of magma. One of the things that that we do every time there's an earthquake, and the USGS has a network of stations around the world, and they're very well managed here in the United States. All of those receive earthquake data. Every time there's an earthquake on the Earth, it not only has an epicenter, but it sends vibrations through the planet that are picked up all over the planet. Well, because of Doppler technology and how these stations are tied together, we're able to sort of do an MRI of the Earth. We sort of know what it looks like on the inside based on the vibrations as they reach these phones. Well, the interesting thing about it, and of course Thorne, Lay, and Terry, and Wallace have a great textbook called Modern Global Seismology. You can read it for yourself, but if you don't want to buy this $130 textbook and read it yourself, just take my word for it that I have read it, and here is the gist of it. Every time there's an earthquake on the roughly opposite side of the planet, somewhere around 30 to 45 degrees away from the epicenter of the quake, these waves strike the other phones. As they strike, you know that they're traveling at the speed of sound through the Earth, so they strike one and then another and then another, and we sort of get a picture of what it's like on the inside of the Earth. There are waves that we count on mathematically, and then there is what's called a shadow zone. In this shadow zone, there are a series of unexplained waves that come in. They can't be traced directly back to the epicenter. They're sort of drawn loosely through their model of the core to the origin point. It would be very difficult if you didn't know where the epicenter of that quake was to map it out if all you had were the reflections on the other side with this theory. Now, couple that with the fact that when we drill for oil, a lot of people don't know how deeply we drill, about 24,000 feet is all we go. Is that the limit? Yes, it probably is, because steel cannot support its own weight stretched out beyond that, and we kind of hold on to the drill steel with a brake, so it stands suspended in the hole, and then we release the brake a little bit to apply tension to the drill bit, and then the drill bit crunches up a little bit of rock at the bottom, and the mud that's being forced down the center of the drill pipe forces the cuttings up the outside of that drill pipe to the surface where they're analyzed, and that's how they can tell what they've drilled through. And of course, this mud is changed in weight depending on what kind of strata they're drilling through, what kind of gas pressure they expect to find. In some cases, this mud is custom mixed off-site and brought to the site by truck, but in most cases, it's mixed right there on site, and it's logged as it comes up out of the ground, sort of time-delayed from where it's drilled at the bottom of the hole, and it's analyzed for what's being found, oil, gas, H2S, carbon dioxide, various things like that, and that's how strata is mapped through our planet. Well, think about it. What's 24,000 feet? Gee, maybe a little less than 5 miles. 5 miles? I drive to work 5 miles. Does that mean in my drive to work I know all about the planet Earth? No. These little tiny holes in the ground do not tell very much about the planet. I think we have a caller on the line. Can you give us your first name and where you're calling from?
This is Gary. I'm calling from Boise, Idaho.
Excellent. Hi, Jerry.
Hang on one second. Let me turn up my volume. I'm sorry.
Sure, no problem.
Yes, I was at that conference and I met you. It was an amazing, amazing place with amazing people.
So I wasn't alone in that feeling.
No, you weren't. And I had the same pictures you do. I got some amazing, amazing aura pictures.
I didn't take any more pictures.
You see people. You see dimensions. You see geometry. It's just simply amazing. I have a large screen TV, and I was doing the same thing, blowing them up and bringing them closer and seeing what you can see in them. And
have you ever photographed orbs before?
No, I never have. And the first night when they were taking them, I was thinking, had to be dust artifacts. Oh, that's not going to, that's just not this, it's not that. I just didn't believe it. So I started doing it myself and actually looking at the pictures and the way we were doing it. Like you say, take one picture, 10 seconds later, it's not there again. But you take a picture somewhere else, you got orbs. You had orbs that were half covering people that were completely covering people. Sometimes you could see the people through them, and sometimes you can see the orbs behind them. I mean, it was definitely not an artifact of light or dust.
And they were all different colors, right?
Oh, amazingly colors. Some of them were rainbow, some were purple, some were blue. Most of them were brown or white. But it was just quite the experience for me.
I kind of hoped that maybe you'd photographed orbs before, because I have seen photographs on other websites, and you see maybe one or five or three or four, but when you got 400 people and they're in a field and they're all concentrating on the same thing, and there's such, did you feel the love that was there?
It was absolutely amazing. At first, when I first took my first one, I only had one or two orbs. So I started some breathing exercises that Sanja had demonstrated with us the day before. And suddenly I had 30, 40 orbs in a picture. Suddenly, it was just the energy that you bring out brings them to you.
So are you still taking orbs where you are now? Or have you taken
I haven't. It's been crazy. I talked to you earlier that next day after you had your experience, and I had a little healing done myself. I had, as I told you at the conference, I had gotten to witchcraft, and I was really in a bad spot. You know, I had one time I couldn't hold a baby or in things without wanting to do harm. So it wasn't me. So I purged myself. I prayed to Jesus Christ. I aligned myself with him. And it took several years before I felt normal again. But I always had a large negativity. And I also had a bad thyroid. And Sanja was a lady who was a yoga expert, and she dealt with thyroid. So I went to go see her. And while we're doing our little session, and she's asking me a few questions, and I'm giving her my energy, she looks at me and says, "Gary, don't be alarmed, but we're not going to be able to work on your thyroid today. You have other problems that we need to deal with." That's all she said. So we got the light going, and she opened up my first chakra and all the way down and filled me with light throughout my body. It's a long-drawn process, but I'm going to make it kind of short for the radio station. Anyhow, wow. As it came down, she cast some negativity out of me. She made me forgive my past and present life and forgive myself for any wrongdoings that were done to me. And things felt better. I was able to work with her. Finally, the light started coming. I started opening up. I could feel her opening up my head, filling it with light. I could feel her filling up my body. Actually, she wasn't. I was working with her, and she was using my energy to relax me. Finally, I'm feeling really good. She's cast off a lot of negativity. I'm working real good, and she actually calls down the Archangel Michael to come down to heal, to strengthen, and to protect me. She said it three times: heal, strengthen, protect. Heal, strengthen, strengthen, protect. The third time, suddenly I'm engulfed in a blinding white light. I am standing in a column of light. But I did skip something. Right before that, she asked Michael to take his sword and put it down through my open crown of my head and down to the base of my spine. As she said this, then I was suddenly standing in this pulsating beam of light shooting straight up. I could no longer hear or see anything but the light. The light was not of love, unconditional love, like you hear so much about. It was of strength. It was a light of strength. That's all I can say.
So you think you were grounded by this light? You say that it went down through your spine. I think that I'm pretty sure that chakra means that you're grounded. So basically all the feelings of ill that you were feeling went to the ground.
Yes, we had already, was already grounded prior to this. We started that already. She opened up my first, second, third, all the way down my seventh chakra. Once I was opened up, then she called for Michael to come down and to heal me. And I, you know, I don't know what to say. I'm not saying that the angel came down and healed me. All I know is afterwards, my whole life has changed. Absolutely, Agnew.
I'm curious, getting back to the orbs. When you took your pictures, were you using a flash?
Yes.
Okay. And was it a really like high resolution camera, a medium resolution camera?
It was 8 meg.
Wow.
With the high intensity flash.
Right. It's not likely that you're going to get blurs or anomalies with that high of resolution. I want you to try to follow up and maybe try to take orb pictures in that kind of state again and see if you get the same thing.
You know, one thing I did see, I saw some people taking them in the daylight. I saw some daylight orbs, non-flash, from the conference. Now, they were way amazing and way cool. Have you ever tried to do that yourself?
No, I haven't, but I don't own a digital camera like that. All I have is a little video camera, and I did take some pictures with that, but I didn't see anything with that. But I'm definitely going to try doing it. I'm going to do some experiments. You know, I'm a scientist, so I've got to do some experiments with it.
Absolutely. This one orb I saw there was actually inside a car. He took a picture of his car, and there's this orb inside the window inside of his car. And it was absolutely, you could see the geometry in it. It wasn't just a little flashlight. It was a really clear, geometrical orb. It was,
what color was it?
It was pretty much a brown and white orb.
Wow. I know in some of the photographs that we saw, they were purple, they were blue, they were bright red, they were white ones.
I know, isn't that just amazing? Big ones and little tight energy ones. I mean, it was just, and yeah, James had a lot of insight on actually about what they were and what they represented. So the people do need to get on there and get that CD and check it out for themselves.
Yes, I can't do that enough. Plus, I'm sure that your purchase of the DVD set, and keep in mind this is about maybe 32 hours of video. You're going to be uplifted. You're going to see things you've never seen before. This was a very intense conference. Didn't you think so?
Oh, absolutely. I saw the conference, and I bought the CDs and brought it home to share with my family and my friends.
Oh, my goodness. Can you share with us how much the DVDs were of the conference?
There was 7 for $70, and he was also selling all, I think, 12 or 13 400, I think. They're going to be having them available probably in, he said, a week, so it might be a few more days they'll be available on the eCity conference site.
Yep, I think that's an excellent purchase for any of our listeners that are listening to this. You're not going to get the same thing you might see in a mainstream downtown LA conference. You're going to get the real thing, unedited. This was an incredible conference. I'm changed by it. How about you, Jerry?
Oh, absolutely. You know, you go there and you're wondering what it's going to be like, and you go there to see UFOs, and then just the conference is just phenomenal. It validated everything I had thought and assimilated myself through my own information through programs like yourself and other programs that I took to myself to heart. On my own, and then you go there, and then people are telling you the same exact things with critical data as yourself, which is so fantastic when you have PhD doctorates standing up and validating your thoughts.
Well, I had some data, and I certainly am going to go after more, which is what I'm going to talk about this hour, but I certainly was not ready to receive a voice that told me peace, love, joy three times, and I'm just now learning the meaning of those three words, the power of those three words. And I was not expecting to hear anything like, because you are quick to forgive, you are forgiven, but it sounds like you got a very similar message.
Absolutely. What happened to me was in my first three densities here on Earth, I was a mess. I was thinking and doing and wanting absolutely all the wrong things. And after my experience, I think I was jump-started into the fourth density. My three lower densities are now bound by my fourth and my love. I mean, I sent you a testimonial that I sent out to everybody, and I sent it to you. And even my wife on the bottom, unprompted, added to it.
So
and if you read it...
Did she watch the DVDs, or was she there with you?
I didn't hear you, sir.
Did she watch the DVDs of the conference, or was she there with you?
No, she's watching them. We are going through them together.
What's her
but
thought? What's her thought on it?
After I came home, because the last few years have been really tough with my mental state and my negativity, I come home and she just looks at me and says, "What happened?"
Mine did too.
I am a changed person. Something happened to me there that healed me from the inside, brought me up into a higher level of consciousness, Agnew. I mean, absolutely. And like I said, I have an email sent to you with her thoughts, and it's just amazing. Amazing, the transformation. I've never been so happy. I have never felt so much love in my life.
Wow. I really appreciate you sharing that with us, Jerry. That means a lot to me.
Yes, and go ahead and share the information I sent you any way you feel like. And I'm going to go ahead and listen off the air, okay?
Very good. Thank you so much for calling, Jerry.
We'll see you next year.
Uh-huh. Well, getting back to... By the way, I definitely want to thank Jerry for calling. It is not easy to call into a talk radio program, and this one reaches so many people. Live, we have a few hundred thousand, but during the week, we have over 10 million, perhaps 12 million people that listen to this. So those testimonies and those words reach out and touch very many people, and I get a lot of mail from your calls, and I just want to let you know how much I appreciate it. Getting back to the hollow earth MRI that these earthquakes take, and the textbook by Thorne Lay and Terry Wallace, Modern Global Seismology, where they talk about these shadow waves and the fact that you really can't trace them back to the point of origin. They're just diffractions, they call them, just anomalies, mistakes that come through. Oh, sure, they're picked up, but... Everybody knows that these waves pass through a solid core and they're diffracted, and that's why they appear this way. But in actuality, mathematically speaking, this is a broken model. And I had a little bit of doubts about its validity, even though this is what's taught in the schools. And so I reached out to other models as a researcher, and I found another set of books by a man named Jan or Jan Lambrecht, however you want to pronounce that. And he decided to work the actual data, backwards to see what kind of model of the inner Earth he could come up with, where there were no shadow waves, where all of the data seemed to fit with no exceptions. And what he got was stunning. Now what we have in opposition, in a direct dichotomy to what you see in the classical view of the Earth, is an Earth with a crust somewhere between 850 and 900 miles thick. In this crust is almost all the mass of the Earth. This is where gravity is collected. And when you think about it, as you look at the way dust gathers together in the universe. Well, let's just go back a little bit further. Let's imagine that you were in an elevator, and the elevator was over a shaft that went to the center of the Earth. And now you're protected from all the heat and elements and everything that are down there. This is a good elevator shaft. You are standing in the elevator shaft on a bathroom scale. You know how much you weigh. You're looking down at the scale, the elevator begins to go down. Now, without adding to or taking away from the acceleration of gravity itself, you weigh what you weigh, regardless of the elevator's speed. So as the elevator travels toward the center of the Earth, what do you think happens to your weight? Well, assuming that mass is what creates the gravity, like Newton would say, wherever there are large bodies in space. They gather gravity around them, and it constructively interferes with one another, adding and adding and adding upon one another until it's, you know, many, many trillions of times more than a single molecule could ever generate, or actually not trillions, but maybe an infinite number of zeros above that. So as you travel toward the center of the Earth, in reality, less and less mass is under you and more mass is above you. So if we are obeying the laws of gravity, what would happen to your weight? Why? It would become less and less. It would only increase as you got closer to the center of the crust, and then it would decrease as you went away from the center of the crust. So in actuality, planets form as spheres, not as solid balls. So we have a crust, let's say 900 miles thick. The Earth is approximately 7,100 miles in diameter. Let's say 7,000 to make the math easy. And let's say that we're talking about a 900-mile-thick crust. That's 1,800 miles of diameter consumed, which leaves roughly 5,200 miles of open space between the inner crust. 5,200 miles. Considering that the space shuttle flies at 240 miles above the crust, that's an awful lot of open space. But it's not completely open. If it were, we would not have a magnetosphere. No, not at all. Instead, we have a solid core inside, but it is insulated by a dielectric of air. That core revolves at a different rate than the crust, hence the dynamo effect that creates the magnetic field around the Earth. Pretty interesting, huh? So now we have a sphere, we have a solid inner core, but this core actually gives off a little radiation. It gives off light. Now, I don't mean light like we see from the sun. That's from a fusion reaction. That is from two hydrogen atoms coming together and forming helium and generating extreme amount of gamma rays, which compresses its neighbor. It also shoots off a lot of high-energy neutrons, which strike other molecules and start a chain reaction, which we call fusion. We enjoy it while we're out on the beach, but we're horrified by it on the tip of a warhead. This inner star, or inner sun, as you want to call it, in the middle of the Earth, is not going through that fusion. It doesn't have enough gravity and it doesn't have enough heat, but it is putting off some radiation. Now, UV from the fusion of hydrogen that we would see, the ultraviolet radiation, will be somewhere around 254 nanometers, which is called UVC. It's a germicidal wavelength, and it would not only blind you, but it would disinfect your skin and kill all the bacteria on the surface of the Earth, and life as we know it would be over. Fortunately, we have a magnetosphere and an ionosphere that absorb most of that, and our ozone layer absorbs most of that, and we only get the longer wavelength ultraviolet, and then on up into the visible and all the way to the infrared. Well, theoretically, this inner sun gives off somewhere from the infrared to the low visible. So perhaps orange, maybe into the green range, but not all the way to the UV range. In any case, this inner sun, even if it was 2,000 miles in diameter, it would still leave 3,200 miles of diameter of open space, or between that sun and the inner crust, 1,600 miles of open space. That is almost 8 times as high as our atmosphere is. Now, the space shuttle flies at 240 miles. It doesn't run into any atmosphere. It has to drop quite a ways to get into the atmosphere. So maybe it's 10 times as thick as our atmosphere. And there may be some vacuum in there as that atmosphere is attracted to the crust, but it's also attracted to the core. So I don't think there's any vacuum in the Earth. In any case, this model makes mathematical sense. There is enough mass in our planet. There's enough magnetic field in our planet. There is enough heat other than what comes to us from the sun radiating from our planet that all of this makes sense. Well, we came to an impasse professionally. We arm wrestled and we arm wrestled and we decided the truth could not be had without someone going to get the data. And so we put together an expedition. I actually joined it late in the game. But here's what happened. I joined an expedition put together by an expedition company in Salt Lake City. They already had a leader. They already had an inspirational person that helped put it together. And they had people interested enough to pay for their own way. And so they began collecting money, which we have been doing with X Squared Radio as well. Relative to the events that happened Saturday night, with maps, charts, blueprints, and the like being downloaded into my body, people at the conference said, I know you don't know what downloaded into you, but when you need it, when the time comes, those images will come to you, and you'll know what to do, and you'll know where to turn. And it became apparent as I was at this conference, sort of insulated from the world. I didn't check my email. I didn't answer phone calls. I just wanted to know what it meant. I came home. I walked into my studio, turned on my computer, and I began reading my email. What I'm about to tell you is both condolences and a fulfillment. I discovered that the expedition leader died suddenly of brain cancer. He didn't tell anyone that he was ill, and it took him rather quickly. It took me by complete surprise. All of a sudden, everything that had happened on that Saturday night began to make sense. I emailed Rodney Clough, who is, I think, probably one of the heart and souls of the Inner Earth Project. He was forlorn. I could hear it in his voice. He knew that their leader was gone. The trip was in chaos. The very event itself was in doubt. And something came over me and I said, Rodney, I will lead the expedition if you want me to. I have the data. I've got the information. It's inside of me. I don't know when it's going to come out. But this expedition has to happen. And if you will put those players together, the people that wanted to go, we will assemble more. And of the right skill sets, and we'll go anyway. I could hear in his voice hope, and over the next 3 days, a series of emails flew around the world to all those people that were going to join the expedition, and to a man, they said, we are going. And so arm wrestling for years and years, over two decades in the field with geologists, as I unveiled my technology in finding oil and gas all across the United States, their theories and my theories, mine proved out, theirs were in a textbook. All of this came to bear at one time. Now we have decided to not take anyone's word for it. I'm not going to wait for a polar expedition team to give me their watered-down, government-censored version of it. I'm not going to read it in a textbook. I'm not going to see it on the Science Channel. I'm not going to be told it by my neighbor or by my mother-in-law. I'm going to go and see. I'm going to go and see, and I'm going to bring a team with me, a witness, witnesses, skilled witnesses. We're going to board a nuclear-powered icebreaker almost 500 feet long, 70,000 tons of her. And we're going to leave out of Murmansk, Russia, next summer, possibly fall, because now our logistics are kind of messed up. Here it is, September, almost, and we have 12 months to get this together. By the time we put in our deposit and secure the ship charter, it'll be 12 months. We don't want to go during the winter. We want to go during the summer for two reasons. One, the ice is thinner and the polar opening will probably be exposed by our travel. And second, the sun will be up and will never go down. Now, people ask us when the ship gets there, and we've got a roughly 840 square mile area to cover in 14 days when we get up there. But we have a helicopter, and we've got another boat on the boat, we've got probes on the boat, and we're going to try to take a three-beam sonar imaging system on the boat so that we can find this opening, if there is one. The question is, if we find an actual opening through the crust to the center of the Earth, will we walk through it at that time? My answer, unequivocally, and I speak for the team, or at least members of the team, is yes, we will go through. Why? I'm going to tell you why. You knew that I was going to tell you why. Here's why. This weekend kind of ties together with it. If there is an inner Earth, as we describe, and it is habitable, as we describe, then there are beings that live there, as we describe. And their lifespan is probably much, much longer than ours. They're not exposed to cosmic radiation. They are exposed to less gravity than we are, and the sun never goes down, which means it is a world of plenty. While we are traveling up there, we will have a satellite uplink on the boat. We will be uploading information live as often as we can. Our plan is to have a film crew with us. We are going to document everything. We are going to collect the data, and as unedited raw, we are going to upload it to a master website. Those people, those scientists that want access to that website, we will arrange that for them. We will also be collecting and analyzing the data on the ship, and as we come up with our analysis, we will also upload that. Are we going to get much sleep? Probably not. There'll be plenty of time to sleep afterwards. The other reason is, there seems to be, from other sources that have come to me, an astral connection between those that live in the center or the inner Earth and those on the surface who are prepared. Obviously, if you have a cloistered world like that, you don't want to just open it up and let military ships come cruising in and stake their flag and say, this is the United States as well, or this is Russia as well. You're going to keep it secret, and secret they have kept it for many centuries, except for a few that have been allowed to see it briefly. The word that we get from our communications is they know we are coming. And they are prepared to escort us through. They want us to take samples. They want us to take pictures. And they want us to introduce them back to the surface, and vice versa. Why? Because many of us are spiritually prepared to do that. Now, does this mean that a 70,000-ton vessel is going to sail down through a hole? I highly doubt it. I think there's a lot of money in that boat. I think the shipping company would say, we're not sailing down there. Perhaps they will bring a ship to meet us. But I am convinced that the data that I have, the maps that I have, the prints that I have, the charts that I have inside of me will be made known at the right time. A sort of an image came to me of a captain turning to me and saying, where to now, Dr. Agnew? And I'm going to be able to tell him. And so we're taking this expedition to gather the information for ourselves. And we're not going to water it down. We're not going to hoard it. We're not going to censor it in any way. We're going to film it, and hopefully the interest in that film will generate the funds to be able to go. Because I can tell you right now, scientists have no money. And the last thing that we want to do is take a boatload of tourists. We do want to take serious people that can take serious measurements. We know they will work for universities, but they'll probably work for private companies. We will probably take in several thousand applicants. There are 100 seats on the boat. They will not all be taken by scientists. There is another need for this expedition. Because we had to prepare ourselves to see these orbs, we had to prepare ourselves to precipitate contact with extraterrestrials. We believe that this same kind of preparation, this same kind of purity, same kind of preparation, spiritually and physically, needs to be made in order to find this opening. Will we be led to it? Possibly. We've got it narrowed down to a very small area based on seismological data, satellite data, and other forms of input. We don't know exactly where it is, but we know generally where it is, and we have the time and the craft to be able to find it. So, when we find it, you'll know about it. I plan on going through. I plan on taking as much of a team as can prepare spiritually to make this journey. If the crust is, in fact, 900 miles thick, we might have a 900-mile journey ahead of us to get to the inner crust. Even at 20 knots, that's a long, long way. Even if we flew a helicopter down through there, I doubt we could make it 900 miles. They don't have that kind of range. Somehow, we're going to have to send a probe, or we're going to have to, I don't know how we're going to get this data out of there, but if we find an opening, I guarantee you we'll be able to find a way back down if we return. If they come to the surface and escort us on their craft, that's all the better. Oh, are you asking me if I would get onto an ET craft from the ship or from the ice? In a nanosecond, I would go. As long as I could take the people I love, as long as I could be sure that I could return to tell the story to you. Now, the interesting thing about it is that the next Science, Spirit, and World Transformation Conference occurs next year at this time. My plan, if this expedition works out correctly, I will return just about the time the conference begins. If I have to, I'll take a helicopter and land in the field and walk into the conference and make my report. I think it's quite possible if they know we're coming and they have the ability, they will send a craft to meet us. I know it sounds amazing. I know it sounds impossible. I know it sounds like something you've never imagined before. But trust me, I'm an explorer. And through this program, you're going to explore with me. So what we have done on the front page of X Squared Radio, x2-radio.com, if you page down a little bit, just scroll down, you'll find it. There is the North Pole Inner Earth Expedition. There are a series, if you'll click on the More Information tab, there's a series of skills that we are looking for. We have roughly 60 openings. 20 are already filled. 20 more are tentatively filled with other skill sets. So there are 60 openings for people in those science disciplines. We hope to raise the money so that those experts can go. even if they don't have the funds. But in order to raise the money, we're going to have to do one of two things. We're either going to have each one of X Squared Radio's listeners to send in 25 cents, which would give us, I estimate, $2 million to make this expedition happen. Or we're going to have to sell the prospect of the expedition to someone who can turn it for a profit. Now, that would be a film company, or that might be a scientific company, hopefully not a government. But you know and I know that those entities will have their own agenda. They will take one license or another that will be profitable for them. I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I'm saying that you might not want it that way. You might want an unadulterated, uncolored, unedited, unslanted version of what the Earth is really like. Think about it for a moment. What we are talking about is the greatest geological expedition in the history of the world. We're not going to Mount Everest. We're not looking for the lost city of Atlantis. We're not ice coring in the Antarctica. We're looking for a polar opening to another world, a society of people that have lived for thousands, maybe tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of years. Maybe it's the source of the dinosaurs. Maybe they migrated out of openings in the crust that formed. They lasted a few generations and died because gravity was too high, cosmic radiation was too intense, food was too scarce, and their birthing process too delicate for the surface of the Earth. I know you can read as much as you want to read, and you'll find reams of books on both sides, but you know what? Nobody knows. Nobody knows. No university, no remote viewer, no guru, no historian, no one knows. So let's go see, and you go with me. That's my promise to you. If you've just joined us, we were talking about hollow earth theory and how the earth could be formed as a sphere, not as a solid ball. And if it's formed as a sphere, then there's an environment on the inside of the earth. In fact, there's an environment on the inside of all of the planets. Does that mean that there's such a thing as Venusians or Martians or Pleiadians? Well, I'm here to tell you, there are tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands, maybe millions of people over thousands of years who know the answer to that is yes. I can tell you this. When I walked into Roslyn Chapel in Scotland, the builders, Templars, Freemasons, access to ancient information, carved every square inch of the inside of that building and directly over the altar, descending out of the ceiling. I have a picture of it. I'll put it on the website. It's in our second book, The Ark of Millions of Years, 2012, and The Harvest of the End Times. There is the inner star and the crust of the earth. Right above the altar. It's there. I photographed it, my picture, and it's on the website for you to look at. Is this powerful stuff? Of course it's powerful stuff. And this archive will be listened to by tens of millions of people over the next 7 days, even more than that over the next 30 days. But I can leave you this promise. the funds are put in place, we will make the expedition. We will bring the information back. And then every single geology textbook in the world will change. Now, my second promise is, I promised you that we would bring you the data. My second promise is, if you go to the website and if you donate as much as a dollar, your name will be included in the introduction in the book as a participant in the greatest geological expedition in the history of the world, and my promise to you that your name will be in the credits of the film when it hits the theaters. We will tell this story . A lot of people say, well, gee, if that's true, then, you know, why do we live on the surface of our planet? My answer is because we can. Our Earth happens to be perfectly situated from the sun that water remains liquid. In our world, H2O is the basis for life. But in other worlds, like, say, Saturn's moon Titan, where methane is liquid and oceans are made of methane. Is there life there? We don't know yet. We don't know if life lives on the surface of that moon. But we're pretty convinced that life does exist on other planets. We just happen to live on one that happens to be beautiful on the surface, where life grows in abundance, from microscopic life all the way to giant animals that fly through the air or swim through the sea. Are we blessed? Of course we are. But don't you think it's funny that other planets might look at us and say, gee, it's kind of funny that those surface dwellers don't even know that there were once people living on the inside of their planet only when the surface was inhospitable. And cataclysm after cataclysm, surface dwellers were wiped out down to 5 to 10% their original populations by cosmic events, by geological events, by tidal waves, by fires, while the inner Earth went on in relative bliss. I'm sure they have their earthquakes too, but not like we do on the surface. Interestingly enough, the alien activity, the ET activity, the quote UFO activity, increased beyond measure when we began toying with nuclear weapons, because as we explode these weapons, they not only create gamma radiation on the surface of our planet and soil our environment with radioactive noise. Keep in mind, the ocean circulates on rivers, streams, that travel around the world and through the world. So as we contaminate our sea, we contaminate their sea as well. I think I shared this with you about a year ago. As when I was doing my graduate work at Oak Ridge, we were doing neutron activation spectroscopy, which is where we bombard a sample with neutrons, a californium source, to bring it over into a quiet chamber and then wait for it to decay. As the neutrons come off, they decay at a certain frequency, and that frequency allows us to identify the unknown, hence the name neutron activation spectroscopy. Well, interestingly enough, the quiet chamber was made of an old cannon barrel. And by old, I mean pre-World War II. And I asked the instructor, why are you using an old cannon barrel as this quiet chamber? And he said something so profound, I wrote it down and I will never forget it. He said, well, that was the only source of quiet metal we could find. I said, what do you mean quiet metal? He said, after the first atomic explosion, all of the iron in the world had some radioactivity to it. So when we made things out of its metal, we picked up those stray scintillations in our chamber, and it made it difficult to get a quiet reading. So we used these old pre-World War I or pre-World War II cannon barrels. We cut them up into segments and plugged the end of them with lead, and we used them as quiet chambers because the metal is quiet. It doesn't have those neutrons packed onto it that came as a result of the nuclear weapon use. It's true. After the first few nuclear weapons, and really we've only blown off two weapons on this planet, nuclear weapons. The rest have been experiments done under controlled conditions in the desert. But since that time, there's no quiet metal on Earth. And that means that their world is changing too. And they're concerned about it. And rightly so. My word is to you that many things are happening around us. Things that the general populace might be unaware of. But I don't know many people who don't believe someone is out there. But there's a difference between a believer and a knower. A believer sort of has faith. A believer sort of said, well, I believe in UFOs. In fact, when people ask me questions, the first question they ask is, do you believe in UFOs? And I say, believe? Isn't that a little like believing in chemistry or believing in mathematics or believing in geometry or believing in biology? That's kind of silly, isn't it, believing in UFOs? It's not a matter of belief. They either are or they are not. And if they are not, what a sad and wasteful universe we live in. And if they are, what a wonderful, exciting prospect of exploration and communication there is laying before us. If they are, and they do live the way they live, and lifespans are what they are off of this planet, and our souls are tied up in all of that, and we are relatives with that, then we have once been before. We have once been with one another. We have once loved and once fought, once given birth to and died next to each other. And that changes everything. That's what this world is about, I think. That's what we have to think about. We'll be back.
It has been our pleasure to have you here this evening.
Oh, I'm sorry, that's the wrong soundtrack. You see, I get a little bit distracted when I'm here by myself, but that's okay. This is the right one. I have to laugh a little bit. I have fun with this. Man, I love this job. In Japanese, it's Watashi wa kono shigotaga suki desu. For those of you listening in Japan, we'll be right back after these messages. Shuttle fleet is very soon going to be retired. No other spacecraft in history has advanced the world more than this fleet. I wanted a way to keep that memory alive in my home, so I went to the space store and ordered a 25-inch model of the Space Orbiter. People who have seen it always comment on the incredible attention to detail in this model. If you know someone who loves the space program, and you want to get them a gift that they will never forget, you should visit the Space Store at X Squared Radio. People are always looking for something inexpensive and unique. Give people they love. Well, now there is a way to give a gift that not only says how long you will love them, but it also allows you to help keep the planet green and growing. Tree Givers at X Squared Radio is the company that will plant a tree on public land somewhere in the 50 states and provide your special person with a beautiful certificate of that placement. This has become one of the most popular gift sites in the world. And because of their love for the Earth, they are changing the world. So visit Tree Givers at X Squared Radio and see if you can find a gift for your special person. Brooks Agnew here with X Squared Radio. If you like wildlife art and would love to add some of the most beautiful replicas to your home or office, you should visit Wildlife Gifts at X Squared Radio. They have everything from pandas to fish to eagles to horses in all sizes and price ranges. No matter what animal you love, they have the art for you. So visit Wildlife Gifts at X Squared Radio for that special someone today. You know, we have revealed to you the ancient prediction that natural disasters are going to increase in power and frequency in these times. We might not always have the National Weather Service or the Emergency Broadcasting Service. So you might want to get your hands on some of the best weather reporting instruments around. Visit Wind and Weather at X Squared Radio and pick up something that might be useful. They also have the neatest gifts for your favorite people who like things for the outdoors or for their meditation garden. Check out Wind and Weather at X Squared Radio. This is Brooks Agnew with X Squared Radio with a message for our friends in the radio broadcast world. If you have noticed that your listeners aren't around anymore, it's because they are right here with us. If you would like them back in your radio fold, then all you have to do is add X Squared Radio to your program content. The statistics don't lie. We are now the fastest growing talk radio program in North America. Don't be late, because we are about to launch another hour of X Squared Radio. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. I can't tell you how much it means to me to have you here, to have you listening, whether you are driving across the country tonight or whether you are working on your favorite project at your computer. Many people go into work the next day, put their headphones on, and listen to the program. And they sort of wish they could call in, but they realize that all of this happened the night before on Sunday. So I'm going to give you, of course, these three phone numbers again, but I'm also going to give you perhaps another avenue. If you want to call us anywhere in the U.S., toll free, our nickel, 877-876-5 877-227-8227. In Canada, you can also call us toll-free, 888-810-8322. And anywhere else on Earth, and I do have many European, UK, Australia, and New Zealand listeners, although it's quite early in the morning for them, the number is 530-876-3222. I'm also going to allow you to email me at bagnew@x2-radio.com. I don't really provide a way for people to do that on the website. You can, of course, leave me feedback in the little forms there. But I specifically want to hear your stories. Many of you are out there and have seen something or had some experience. And by some, I mean there are many, many thousands. I have spoken at MUFON conventions. I don't particularly give a presentation on unidentified flying objects or extraterrestrials, other than when I talk about the information that's in our two books, which E.J. Clark is my co-author. She is a very fine archaeologist, a world traveler, a very excellent writer, and a very excellent researcher, and has been the main thrust to getting these two books out, The Ark of Millions of Years, Volume 1, and The Ark of Millions of Years, Volume 2, 2012, and The Harvest of the End Times. The first one is New Discoveries of Light on the Creation. There's roughly 1,000 pages there, but although it is the most comprehensive book ever done on the creation of the Earth, we only scratched the surface. And when I am interviewed about those books, whether it's on the 800-pound gorilla or one of the other satellite programs or original programs like X-Squared Radio out there, even if it's a three-hour program, we don't even get into past the table of contents barely. There is so much information there that it is almost overwhelming. But we really do our best to put this in as organized a form as we possibly can, and there's more. There's much more. We have not covered the extraterrestrial aspect of this yet, but we are going to in the next volume, The Ark of Millions of Years, Volume 3, which will include the polar expedition to the inner Earth. One cannot think about this or talk about this without considering that there are others out there, other worlds, other civilizations, other forms of intelligence. Some of it is physical, just like we are. They jump in a can and they fly a certain distance and they arrive here, although they've got to have some pretty amazing drive systems. That's what occurs. And that's what we see in the desert sky, and that's what we see out on the open ocean. And these are the black triangles and the saucers and dirigibles. These are the things that we have seen. Well, this hour, what I would like, for those of you that are listening live, call one of those three numbers and tell us of your experience. You don't even have to give your first name if you don't want to. But I know there are people out there that have had an experience, and I would like to get it. I would like to hear it from you. If you're listening to the archive, then I want you to email me your story, and I will read it on the radio program, or you can give me your phone number, and we will call you on our nickel, and we will get your story. There is one that goes with our team, E.J. Clark. You must know by now, because I've let it slip a bunch of times, as a woman. When she was a little girl, she was traveling with her mother across the desert in a car one night in 1947. During the travel, in an open sky, there were two large flashes of lightning. They were driving near the area of Roswell, cross country. The interesting thing is, right before this occurred, it appeared as though there was something following the car. They were the only car on the road. In those days, not many people traveled cross country. And as she relates the story to me, and we're gonna provide this story in text and in documentation form, in audio form, to Art Campbell, who is writing another book. You know, he's the one that wrote about the San Augustine crash. We've had him on the program. Great interview. Very thorough writer. It is quite possible that my co-author, E.J. Clark, was involved either as a distraction or as a witness to the Roswell crash. I personally have already related my experience to you the first hour of this program. For those of you that are just tuning in, I'm not going to relay it to you again. You'll have to listen to the archive. And this hour is for you. I'll talk a little bit about it, but as the calls come in, these visitors, these travelers, these unexplained flying objects come in a variety of forms. They come in flying triangles, they come in dirigibles, they come in discs, they come in mists, they even come as flying men in the sky. And I know you've had experiences with these, and I want you to share them with our listeners. This, consider X Squared Radio your sanctuary. We're not owned by anyone. We're not controlled by major networks. And we can put on the air what we want to put on the air, but I'm interested in your story. And you can share it with us this hour. It's often been said that if there was no life out there, if you'll recall Carl Sagan's movie Contact, then it's an awful waste of space. When it doesn't take much of a philosopher to figure out, if we're here, then they are here as well. The prospect of intelligent life here on the Earth, and we'll do just a little bit of logic here, and I can help you through this, bring you up to speed. If there is intelligent life here on this planet, and there is intelligent life on other planets as well. And it doesn't take much of a logical jump to assume that some are going to be more primitive than us, and some are going to be more advanced than us. Advanced enough to fly? Of course they will be. We're flying, aren't we? And we're only using one or two governments because we're locked into an economic system that pours most of our resources into a few macroeconomic systems. We don't pool our resources as a planet. We haven't learned to live with our planet yet. We'll talk more about that next week with Michael. We live in spite of our planet. We live in contempt of our planet and its resources. So we don't pool our resources to explore space, but there are planets out there who do pool their resources to explore space. And they have explored us, and they are exploring us, and they're interested in us. And, as I felt this last weekend, they love us, and they are attracted by our unconditional love. It has a lot to do with it. You've also heard Dr. Stephen Greer on this program. He has talked about the CE5 protocol, the Close Encounter of the Fifth Kind protocol. I have enrolled in a consciousness training seminar, which occurs. It's scheduled for November through DisclosureProject.org to the CSETI.org website. And I intend to increase and improve my skills, not just as an Earth explorer, but as an individual. And I can't report to you what goes on there, but you will obviously be a benefit of that change as well. So, all of that is going on around us. One of the things that happened at the James Gilliland's Science, Spirit, and World Transformation Seminar was kind of different. They had an open mic, and James was talking at the end of his lecture, and he asked anyone who wanted to come up to the mic and share their experiences so far. Well, and then he picked me out of the crowd. He said, Dr. Agnew had an amazing experience. Maybe he'll come up and share it with us. And I shared a little bit of it, but I shared most of it during my presentation on Sunday. And there were people that just got up and shared their experience. But I think they were unafraid because of the sanctuary that James provided for us. And I got to tell you, I had a misunderstanding about this entire thing. When I heard the word sanctuary, and I knew that Mount Adams was an ET hotspot in the United States, it's probably one of the top two, I thought it was a sanctuary where ETs could come unassailed and expose themselves and, you know, show themselves to the world. I completely misunderstood. The sanctuary was for us. It was a place where we could come and share our feelings and share our thoughts and our beliefs without being told we're crazy. And my friend thinks it's pretty cool how the entities were able to zero in on each person's desire and readiness and their level of experience. Each person was personally prepared in a certain way, personally open to see and experience certain things. And you could see the levels of that experience. People that had been there year after year had deeper and deeper experiences as they came to terms with the one they had the previous year. I had never had an experience. I came there with an open mind. And when I saw what I saw, it still frightened me. Now, recently someone asked me, as part of an organized interview, if you are presented with the opportunity to step aboard a craft and take a journey, either sightseeing around this planet or maybe to another planet, would you do it? Would you leave? I know that I'm going to be with someone I love. I know I'm going to be somewhere in my life where I'm able to go. And I didn't hesitate. My answer, like Richard Dreyfuss in the movie Close Encounters of the Third Kind, you'll remember, he left his family, he just walked aboard, and he took his trip. And they chose him because he was prepared emotionally. Well, you think all of these movies are just pulled out of thin air? No, these things exist. These thoughts have been solidified and been refined into the work of film. But I'm here to tell you, I'm fairly sure lots of people get on those crafts every day, and they take their trips and they learn their lessons and they bring back experiences, and they're changed. And for the next 40 minutes, those people have a chance to call in this program and tell us of your experience. We know about the Billy Myers. We know about individuals that have made these trips and come back. We've heard their stories, but what about yours? What part of the country do you live in where you have seen something you can't explain? Lights. Those are the common ones. Orbs, even a more rare experience. But contact. Actual contact. That's the next phase, isn't it? Honestly, I did not expect to go up there and have a craft land in the field, extend its staircase, and have me climb aboard. I wasn't ready. Just the sighting of one anomaly high above my head was enough to send my heart up through my throat. But I'm being prepared, as are you, and we are nearing the event of global first contact. A couple of weeks ago, a person was recording the NASA channel. The NASA channel is very interesting. For those of you that have satellite TV, you get the NASA channel often late at night when they're not running archive tapes. They run the camera that's on the space station, and you can just look at Earth going by under the space station night and day, whatever landmass it happens to be over. At that particular time, the space station, or the shuttle, was over the Andes Mountains, and it was covered with clouds, and it was nighttime. But as luck would have it, this individual happened to tape this footage as a huge craft. I mean, this craft was probably 30 to 50 miles across. A huge craft came up through the clouds, passed across the top of the clouds and out of the screen. I'm sure you saw the footage. It has been passed around the web so many times in the last couple of weeks that the GIF files, which make the file small enough to send around, have become so grainy that it's difficult to see. But someone out there has the original TiVo, the original digital recording of that. And, if you have access to that, if you're the one that did it, you can always post it here on X Squared Radio, and we'll show it. We've often talked about how ETs travel across space. I mentioned earlier that maybe they jump in a titanium can on their world, fire up the engines and take off. Well, even if they traveled at the speed of light and they came from the Pleiades, you know how long it would take to get here. A long, long time. Years and years to get here. Well, that doesn't seem so totally unlikely, but it seems more likely that there is an alternate drive system, a way of moving through space without traveling in a straight line. Sort of folding space, or traveling subspace, or traveling superluminally by changing gravitational fields around the craft. All of this is theoretically possible, but we haven't mastered it yet. Well, if we have, we're not sharing it with the world, because the very drive system that would make, the very energy source that would make that kind of drive system possible would also make us energy independent. A drive system like that could be converted into a source of energy in a remote area of the world and could provide for life in remote areas that right now are uninhabitable. We live where the power lines are. Where there are no power lines, there's no life. That's the way of this world. Those that control the collection and generation and transmission of those electrons control where people live. So the technology that comes from that is destined to change the planet. Is that a change we're ready for? Well, I am. I would certainly like to live in a wilderness, or in the desert, or in the mountains, and there are third world countries on this planet that have no potable water. How they survive is beyond me. I guess they drink the local river water. which has to shorten their lifespan significantly because it's got to be filled with all kinds of germs and pollutants. Just think about Las Vegas for a moment. If the Colorado River was shut off, Las Vegas would dry up and blow away in a month. One of the most exciting cities on planet Earth would become a dust bowl in a month. With that kind of energy source, you could turn any place, even Death Valley, into Las Vegas. Maybe that's what our governments are hoarding from us, keeping from us. And maybe this is what the ETs, the extraterrestrials, the off-worlders, maybe this is what they're trying to share with us. Maybe this is just one of many answers they have for us. Hopefully we're not too primitive to receive it. Hopefully we're advanced enough. And what does that mean, advanced? Does that mean that we're smart enough, we have enough schooling, we have enough diplomas, we can work enough math, we can make enough war? Or does it mean that we're advanced in the act of loving one another? Because it seems, through the experts that I know now, that this ability to love, this ability to accept one another, this ability to value love and value life is what qualifies us to be connected with these extraterrestrials and these trans-dimensional beings. They have become advanced enough. They've grown beyond war. They have grown to the point where love is the central theme of their existence. And they see it in us. They see us love each other. But they also see us kill each other. They also see us use one another and hate one another and abuse one another. And maybe this is what makes us not ready. I can tell you that this seminar, this conference that I went to this last weekend, and the seminar that I have signed up for, this is where the hope of mankind is. To be grateful for mortal life, because in this form we are limited in how we can interpret our universe. But you know what love feels like. If you don't, keep listening to this program. We'll try to change that. Listen to BBS Radio Network. There are lots and lots of hosts on here that talk about that and can help you get in touch with that. I have not known anyone that's had this experience or has attended an area where you can have this experience that has any guile or hatred in their heart. The love that you feel is almost overwhelming, but it's refreshing and it's invigorating. It's so energizing. Not in the sense that it makes you giddy like a little kid jumping around, but in a sense that you feel life force itself, and you feel the eternity of life. And in this, there is hope for mankind. In each day, looking for the good in one another, trying to bring it out, seeking it out, this is what these other civilizations from other worlds feel. This is what they value in us. It is said by some that they even envy that in us, that we can love so intensely, that we can bond one to another and become one. That is what can save the planet. when I turn on the news, I noticed today that they let the two journalists go. And I thought to myself, why did they do that? They didn't let those men go because there were guns pointed at them. They didn't let those men go because there were tanks surrounding the house or helicopters flying overhead. They let them go because their friends poured their love over the airwaves day after day after day, pleading with their captors, "These men have done no wrong. They were here to tell your story." On and on and on I heard love for these two men. And now they're alive and they're free. This one thing that I talked about in my presentation, I'm going to share it with you. I wrote it down. Hang on one second. While the conference was going on and I was listening to the other very fine presenters, I began taking notes. And since I'm an avid journal taker, this is what my notes came out like. See if you like this. We live in a time treasured by all the prophets, heralded by all the scientific imaginations, and hoped for by all the ancient historians. To deny this is to avoid the global enlightenment we are speaking about today. They left us signs, symbols, and even writings to prepare us. The galactic community has been here for hundreds of centuries trying to help our colony mature to the point where we can join them as the explorers we were born to be. Can we fail? Yes, we can. The race of mankind has been here before. There are forces on the earth determined to destroy us. Up until now, our mission may have been unclear. Traditionally, we peaceful people have always fled to the wilderness. We have sacrificed ourselves to blaze trails through the frontiers of deserts, mountains, and perhaps even into space to enjoy peace and freedom. Well, now, the wilderness is no more. Evil has come to us and threatens to consume us or enslave us. Secretly and openly, we pray that their hearts will be changed or that they will magically go away. History tells us that they do not just go away. The more we pray and appease, the more they will take from us. But we are not a people of force. We are merciful and quick to forgive. So what can we do to transform the earth? Well, evil has an allergy: light. If we are enlightened, or say that we are children of the light, then perhaps our mission is to help flood the earth with light. In the light, freedom can prosper. In the light, liberty and peace can flourish. And I said at the end of my presentation, I hope you have some more information about the human race. I hope you have an idea what you can become. I hope you can discover that we cannot despair, for everything we do will eventually affect the universe. We are trans-dimensional beings quite capable of visualizing the smallest quantum and the birth of new solar systems. Our astral bodies can move through space and time, but we need to remember how, or we need to awaken the capabilities left for us in our DNA by the designer. In other words, it is time for the human race to transcend its instincts. It is time for us to trust our wings There is more than enough for everyone on this planet. If we would just learn and see that we are unlimited in our potential. There was a time when ETs visited the Earth, and they were heralded, they were placed in the role of gods. There was a time when the portion of enlightened people were almost eliminated from the Earth, making it impossible or pointless for ETs to visit. But we are nearing a time, I think, when every country, every race, is thoroughly infused with enlightened people. We are very close to criticality of energy, enough to ignite the metamorphosis of the human race. That metamorphosis is changing as we speak. You feel it. I know you do. Men will walk away from their weapons, leaving them in the field, abandoned to rot in the rain. Once we realize who we are and what our relationship is with the galactic community, they know this. That's why they come here, because they know the time is close. They know that we are preparing ourselves. They can feel it. We cannot give up now. We must reach out to one another, not just on this world and in this world, but beyond this world. If you've been listening to X Squared Radio for the last year, and in 1 week it will be 1 year since X Squared Radio went on the air, then you know its purpose. We're bringing you the best minds, the best explorations in all fields that have to do with the metamorphosis of mankind. We are going to grow, we are going to change, and we are going to become one. There are those that don't want this to happen. They don't belong to this world. They came here with contempt and jealousy and hatred and evil in their hearts, and that's all they know. I don't know what's going to happen to them, but I know the men that they order, the armies that they command, will go home to their families, to their children, to their wives, to their lovers, to their friends, and they will give up war forever. I know this because I've seen it happen. If the feeling that we had when we were being visited this last weekend could be spread across the world, and I believe it is, through programs like X Squared Radio, then the planet will change. If we change, then what we're doing will change. And we will become one. I know this. I know you know it. I know you can't deny it. What I don't know is if you're afraid of it. I know I can tell when you don't call that you're afraid to go on the air. I know when you write me, your emotions are in there. And I cherish them more than anything, the thousands of pieces of fan mail that I've gotten. And I want you to have the information. I know it sounds a little commercial, but you have to get the books. You've got to read the books. Read The Ark of Millions of Years. Read Hidden Truth, Forbidden Knowledge. Read Your Never-Ending Life. Read these books. Get this knowledge in you. Go back and listen to the archives of this program. Listen to the coming guests. Don't miss a program, because that's what we're concentrating on. I don't go on 5 days a week because I'm not pushing it. I go on 1 day a week for 3 hours. It takes me all week long to prepare for these 3 hours so that you get the best. You get the best interview, you get the most passion, you get the deepest questions. We reach for the truth, whether it's mathematics, whether it's astrophysics, whether it's religion, we will reach it for you. If you want it, tell me. Every single guest you have requested, I have gone after. And I will continue to do that. It's a little bit passionate, I know. And I know we go a little past your imagination, but that's okay. You're safe here. As long as you keep your arms inside the vehicle, you're safe. What I experience, you will experience. And if it's valuable to you, all the better. There are radio hosts out there that have made an absolute fortune just by telling you their thoughts and their ideas. Well, I'm not attempting to make a fortune at all. If I was, I'd be charging for my archives and my podcasts, and this broadcast itself would be costing you money, but it doesn't, because I don't need much. That's not what I'm here for. I'm here to provide something for you. That's what I was born for. That's the way I'm trying to live my life. I met someone else this week.
Hi.
Hey, hello. Who's this?
This is Jean.
How are you? Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from South Dakota, and I just want to tell you that I think your program's great, and what you're doing is wonderful. And I haven't been able to listen as much as I wanted to lately. Our daughter's in New York having some brain surgery done, and so we've got our 2.5-year-old grandson here, and he's a little more work than we thought.
Well, I know how 2.5-year-olds are. I have one myself.
Yes, they
can. Her name is Madison.
They're a lot of fun, but they're also a little bit of work.
I just have to remember back when I was 2.5, and then it's no problem.
Exactly.
So,
well, I just wanted to let you know that I think that what you're doing is wonderful, and I would have loved to have been in Washington, but we were here taking care of our grandson, and we're looking forward to going to some of the other get-togethers.
Well, that's great. Have you ever had an ET experience yourself?
Yes. Yes, we have, and my daughter Carrie, Daniel has been working with her and helping her with her guides and getting her ready for this brain surgery, and I guess, you know, everything happens for a reason, and I guess she was not quite on the right path if she needed a bump in the head like that to get her to change things.
Well, can you tell me a little bit about your personal experience?
I had cancer at one point in my life, and they did a hands-on healing. And when they were doing the hands-on healing, I saw a Christ white light spirit, and he told me everything was going to be okay. And I went to the surgery and did fine, and that's one of my experiences.
How long ago was that?
That was about 10 years ago.
Wow, 10 years. What a miracle.
And there's no feeling like it, being engulfed in the Christ white light.
The light that you feel, the feeling that you felt was of immense love?
Pardon me?
The feeling that you felt was of immense love?
Yes, yes it was. Of immense love and knowing that I was protected and going to come through it fine. But I'm going to have to let you go. My grandson's in here, and he's given me a little trouble here. Can you say hi, Chris?
That's
hi.
All right.
No? Okay. But it was very nice talking to you, and I listen to your program all the time, and I will continue to listen.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. You have a great evening.
I will.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
I love the area of of the Dakotas. I actually spent a winter in Grand Forks, North Dakota when I was in the Air Force. I don't recommend that for anybody, that experience. I remember one day putting my parka on and going outside, and on the flight line the wind was blowing, and it was 76 below zero, and I thought, oh my goodness, this is not Earth. This has got to be the surface of the moon. Everything changes when it's that cold, let me tell you. But, you know, we had the proper clothing, and I thought it was actually pretty cool when a few weeks later it got warmed up and the sun came out, and we said, hey, let's go play some tennis. So we broke out the tennis rackets, and we went out to the court, and we started hitting the ball back and forth, and darn balls wouldn't bounce. And we thought, man, these things are flat or something. And then we realized it was 0 degrees outside. We were so used to that extreme cold that when it got up to zero and the sun came out, the wind wasn't blowing, that it was warm, but the tennis balls didn't believe that. They wouldn't bounce at all. So I know that there are tens of thousands of you out there listening to these words, and you have already been changed. You already feel the love. You already know that the connection between us and civilizations from other worlds, the link is love. That is what they're waiting for. They're waiting for us to get to a point where we can accept that kind of love and we can give that kind of love. We're not there yet, but we're getting pretty close. So what I want you to do, if you listen to this program, is tell a friend. Get them to listen. Go back, listen to the archives. Email them a link. And remember, when you go to buy something, just check the website first. See if one of those banners might have a gift or an item that you need. Don't forget that we've added Nitro Pack as one of our affiliates. They've been around for 18 years. I've checked them out. Their supplies, and they give all kinds of stuff from 72-hour kits to whole year supplies of food from Mountain Source Foods. And they've got everything you need, radios, blankets, water filters, air filters, any kind of thing that you want to get, you can get it through Nitro Pack. Just make sure you click on the banner at X Squared Radio and all that will come together for you. And you'll be helping us out because it doesn't cost you a penny more, not a dime more, but they give us a little commission every time you make a purchase on there, and that helps out X Squared Radio. It does cost a few $100 a month to do this, even though I broadcast from deep beneath the earth in western Kentucky. As we grow, more and more people want more and more things from us, and we try to bring you the best guests. And obviously, those long-distance calls aren't free either, but we do it because we love. I met some outstanding people. I only have about 5 minutes left. I did want to say that I did meet my producer in person, Don Newsom, who is the person that brings you all of the programs here on BBS Radio at great expense, both in money and in time. A great amount of love from this individual. But I met him, and I got to tell you, I just hugged the guy up, and the great love in this man and his dedication toward bringing you this is why you have this. We also simulcast from the Global Star Radio Network, which is where the AM stations access us. And many more thousands of people listen that way as well. So we want to make sure that you give us the call letters of your local AM radio station, because one of the things that does, if you call us from, say, Salt Lake City, and you give us the call letters of that AM station, is I contact that station and say, hey, your listeners are giving me your call letters and wanting me to contact you to say you can have X Squared Radio on your radio program. And all these listeners that are now not listening to you on Sunday nights because they're here will return. And one of the things that does for us is it gives us more revenue streams, and we're able to bring you more and more content and perhaps even add one more night a week or maybe two. Of course, then I'll have to have a staff working with me to do all this research because it does take a lot to put this together. But I want you to know that I bring it with you to you with all of my heart, and I try to give you the best information. I try to give you an opportunity to tell your story from wherever you are. And when my guests come on, whether we're talking about a book or a philosophy or an expedition, They get to tell their whole story. We don't break them up with commercials. We don't tear them down. There's a couple things you should know about X Squared Radio, where the idea came from. Any number times itself is positive, except one. And that is the number I. For those of you that know of mathematics, that's the square root of negative one. Well, the square root of negative one times the square root of negative one is negative one. So I try not to put I on the program. Tonight, I was on the program, and I tried to be as positive as I possibly could. Most of the time, when you listen to this program, it'll be the guests that are speaking, it'll be me asking the questions. We'll reach as far into that person as we possibly can to get them to tell their story to you, so that you can learn, so that you can grow, so that you can share it with someone else. But I am insignificant to that. I'm just a facilitator. So I times itself is negative one, and I'll try not to do that too much for you. That's the mathematics behind X Squared Radio and why the results are always positive. And we try to give that gift to you each week so that you can keep it with you through the week, so that you can share it with another, because I know everything we do will eventually affect the universe. And I try to do it on purpose. And that purpose is right here, behind this microphone. And if you get that, if you receive it, if you listen to it, then it's a treasure for me. And I think it's a treasure for the world. And I think it's this kind of treasure that will change the planet. It may save us. Something has got to light the fire to start this metamorphosis and pull us away from the religiosity of self-destruction that we're on this earth. I leave these words with you with all of my heart, with my love. Next week, we will be on with Michael Sinana, and we'll be talking about earth vibrations, and we'll be talking about the ecology of the earth, what man is doing to upset that, and what we can do to correct it. So make sure to send me your call letters. Make sure to do your shopping through X Squared Radio. And keep listening. And we'll continue to be the best. It has been our pleasure to have you here this evening. Tell a friend about us, because every Sunday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, we try to provide the best 3 hours of talk radio on Earth. If you're not getting all 3 hours where you live, send the call letters of your local radio station and we'll do the rest. Remember, Earth Explorers, who you are. Everything we do will eventually affect the universe, so try to do it on purpose. Be aware that every life is immensely valuable. Reach out for the good in people and help it to grow a little every day. And before long, you will have saved the planet. This is Brooks Agnew with X Squared Radio saying, peace, Earth Explorers.